Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to be with you. Let's open our Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3, please. 1 Peter chapter 3, we'll look at a passage there to begin as we start our study this afternoon. If you're visiting here, as I am this week, thank you so much for joining this church and worship to God. That period of singing was a delight. It's wonderful. Wonderful songs, wonderful worship. It's been a joy to be with you. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think you'll be honest with me. Down in Dallas, we have a worship arrangement like you all do, where we, on a typical Sunday, we worship from 9, 10, and 10:50. We're done at about 12 o'clock, and so we worship long in the morning, and then we use our evenings for studies and other activities. But there's a prime time between 1, 2, and 3 p.m. that's used just for nap time. And so I understand that some of you gave that up today. You may be sleepy. You may be a little drowsy. You came straight from lunch to be here, and that sacrifice has not gone unnoticed. And so thank you for being here. Thank you for coming, even though it may be a little bit different than your typical schedule. It's amazing, isn't it? Don't show any heads or nods, but when you miss a nap, when you're used to half the nap, that hurts. It hurts a little bit, but we'll be all right. If this morning's lesson was... This morning's lesson was an old-timey lesson. We're going to the 21st century today because we're going to talk about something you see on the screen. Let's kind of just begin. Let's begin talking about a few things before we lay out this sermon. It could be that as you saw this, perhaps you heard what was going to be preached on, or maybe you just see the title. You're just not really familiar with what any of this is about, that you're not involved with social media. You don't have any of those accounts. And so the things I'm going to be talking about tonight might seem like a foreign language to you, and that's all right, that's okay. I guarantee that there are going to be things in the lesson here tonight that is for everyone. It's kind of like the sign at a ranch in Texas that said, horses for everyone. Fast people, fast horses. Slow people, slow horses. People that have never ridden a horse before. Horses never been ridden before. I like that. If you didn't get it, you've never ridden a horse before. Anyway. There's going to be principles that apply to our use of social media that can be applied in all areas of our life, in all areas of our communication and in our influence. But I guarantee that maybe if you're here tonight and you are not a part of social media, I'm sure you probably have children or grandchildren or friends that are, and the things we're going to talk about may be some things that you need to talk about with them at another time. And so I encourage you just to follow with me. We're going to make it as clear as possible as we talk about what it means to be a Christian engaging the digital world that seems to be before us today. Social media is simply defined. I think Webster defines it as a website or application designed to share information and engage with others on a social basis. It's really broad. But I think if we put this up there, most of you are familiar, I'm sure, with at least one or two of the major social media sites. So Facebook, you probably cannot read that. I'll interpret it for you. Facebook has about 2.1 billion monthly active users. Twitter, which is Bird, has 330 million monthly active users. LinkedIn has 530 million. Instagram has 800 million. Snapchat has 178. The Facebook Messenger has 1.3 billion. And then Pinterest, which if you're into Pinterest, it does have a social component to it, has about 150 million monthly active users. Of course, the largest of all the social media sites is Facebook. There's 1.4 billion monthly active users. But if you notice on this side of the screen, there are 890 million daily active users. Let that sink in for a minute. 890 million people log into Facebook every day. The average American spends about 40 minutes per day on Facebook. And believe it or not, Facebook, 56% of those on Facebook are not kids. They're not our young ones. They're ages 65 and older. It's the parents and the grandparents wanting to share their information. Kids say, look, if mom's on here, I'm going somewhere else. We're not going to be on the same side. But it's mainly our older folks. Let's just pause for a moment before we go on. 1.4 billion monthly, 890 million daily. This is something that shepherds of all local congregations need to pay attention to. This is something that we as preachers need to be preaching on consistently. This is something that parents, grandparents need to have your eye on because this is where people are today. Where is our church? Where is the world? Where's your kids and your grandkids or your great-grandkids? Guess what? They're online. This is something that we've got to understand. We need to have a proper understanding of this subject, and we need to be talking about how to wisely navigate this. And so if maybe you're here and this is not something that you've talked about in your household, if this is not something that's been brought up in a Bible study in a while or in the local congregations where you are, it may be time. Because look, this is where a lot of people are spending their time. Now, not all about social media is bad. There's some good things about it, as we'll talk about tonight. But certainly there are some statistics I think are worth noting about how our engagement with social media has changed our lives. It just has. And so face-to-face family time has decreased from 33% to 8%. There used to be a time that families would get together and have dinner at a table, and they'd talk about their days. And that was dropping, right, when TV came along, and TV was more than once a day, or black and white, and on the legs, and the family, it got less and less. But with the over-engagement of smartphones and technology, face-to-face family time has decreased from 33% to 8%, and 32% of social media or texting is used during meals. I mean, have you seen it? You go out to eat, and you see a family, and they're all... My favorite is when you see two people and it's obvious they're on a date, but they're doing this. And you know they're probably talking to each other, you know. You look nice. How would you know? You're not looking at me, you know. Isn't that wild? It happens during dinner. 32%. 2 out of 3 workers access Facebook during work, and then shockingly they say that 51% of workers feel that productivity has suffered. I wonder why. It's changed. It's changing our world. It's changing the way that we interact with one another, the way that we engage with each other. Now you may be here tonight and you may be thinking, you know, you don't have any business talking to me about what I do online, about my social media accounts. You don't have any right, any business telling me what I am or am not to do on these certain sites. And you're right, I have no business to do so, but God certainly does. You see, if you're in 1 Peter chapter 3, you can read it in your Bibles or you can read it on the screen. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, Peter says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." Just notice that phrase in yellow, sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, Lord as Master. Peter says, when you have set aside Christ as the Lord, He is the Lord of you, the Lord of all of you, the Lord of your heart. And so He is the Lord of your finances, and He is the Lord of your occupation. He is the Lord of your marriage, and the Lord of your home, the Lord of your leisure, and the Lord of your time. And that includes the Lord of what you do online, the Lord of your social media activity. He has something to say about all of that. If Christ is Lord of all, then He is Lord of all of me. And so I need to allow His words to govern my activity no matter where I am or what it is I'm doing. So tonight what I'd like to do is give you some scriptural principles about some do's and some don'ts regarding social media. Just some simple things, simple thoughts from the scripture about helping us navigate and understand social media. And we'll kind of talk about it together here. Here's a don't. Let's start with our don'ts. Number one, don't bring dishonor. Don't bring dishonor. There's a lesson that we all learn in life at one point or another. Our young people seem to struggle with it more than others. And that is, what I do affects more than just myself. It influences more than just myself, rubs off on just more than about myself. You see, we all have a special name given to us by our parents, that last name, and it attaches us to a family, to a heritage. And so if I act a certain way, if I act shameful and disgraceful in a certain way, it will reflect poorly upon my parents. And the proverb teaches that a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. And so if I am disgraceful, if I'm just absolutely ignorant in my behavior, rude in my behavior online, certainly that can reflect poorly on my family. But take that thought with me. My activity, whether offline or online, if it is just absolutely immoral or disrespectful, not only can it reflect poorly on my family, it can reflect poorly upon this local church, and most importantly, it can reflect poorly upon God. You see, when Nathan the prophet was sent to David after David's great sin with Bathsheba, he told him about that very thing. He says, however, because by this deed you have given occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme. The child also that is born to you shall surely die. See what he's saying there? David, through what you've done, the lies, the cover-up, the deceit, the murder, you've given the enemies of the Lord ammunition. You've given them reason to blaspheme the name of God. And we need to think about that. Me as a child of God, as a Christian, I'm open about that, and we should be. A proud Christian, a disciple of Christ. a child of the King, if I do anything socially, publicly, if I do anything that endorses immorality or promotes profanity or encourages immodesty or suggests or supports sin, I'm bringing shame upon the Lord to whom I'm upon. I need to think about the things I'm posting. I need to think about, is this going to be something that will reflect poorly, not only upon the church and my family, but is this something that's going to reflect poorly upon God? And a tricky thing about social media, if you're familiar with it or not, especially Facebook, is that sometimes the things that you simply like or share, it gives the appearance that you like or condone or support everything involved with that text or with that share, with that post. You see, Paul talked to me, we looked at this text this morning from the book of Romans chapter 1, that there are some involved in this wrathful disobedience from God. He says that though they, these sinful people, though they know the ordinances of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but they also give hearty approval to those who practice them. He said there's some people, they sin. They outright disobey God. They're in rebellion. But then there's some people who also give support of that. And so I need to think about if I'm liking or sharing something and it involves sin, it involves something that God would not approve of, it gives the appearance that I am in full support, that I am endorsing that very thing. So the lesson is this. Be careful. Be careful what you post. Be careful what you like. Be careful what you share. Think twice. Look twice. You don't want to give any appearance of evil through the things that you're doing online. In other words, don't let Satan use your Facebook page as a billboard for his activity. Don't let him use you for that. Be careful. Don't do anything. Don't post anything. Don't like anything that would bring shame or dishonor upon the Lord. Here's another don't. Don't stir up controversy. Don't be that person. Don't be that person that stirs up controversy. There's a pointed language in the Proverbs which says, a fool's lips walks into a fight and his mouth invites a beating. A fool's mouth is his ruin and his lips are a snare to his soul. I love the pointed language of this. His mouth invites a beating. What happens when you smack a hornet's nest? You know, I think there's some people they really don't know. I think some people think, you know, I can smack the nest. I can smack that bee's nest all I want to, and they're going to flow out of there and just kiss my little cheeks. I mean, what happens, right? What happens when you smack a hornet's nest? What happens when you say certain things about certain subjects in a certain tone? We know it. Inevitably, it's going to stir the pot. Inevitably, it's going to get people roused up and get them mad. And there are some people, they delight in making people mad. They delight in getting an arousal out of other people. Now, here's the thing. When we're online and when we're on Facebook, I think we know this truth. Sometimes the truth makes people mad. Truth makes people upset. It always has. Jesus talked about that. There are some people, they will not like the truth. And so we're not saying that you cannot share the truth. You cannot share what you believe, that you have to silence what it is that's really truth if you want to share the gospel. That's not what we're talking about. There's a difference between sharing the truth and what Paul would say in the book of Galatians 5 and verse 26 about let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. That idea of provoking one another, stirring up someone to wrath, causing someone to get angry. That's some people. Some people just find a light and making people upset online. And so maybe it's that there's a real high profile person and you know some people like him. And so, you know what, I'm just going to run them through the mud. I'm going to post a really ugly picture with this really mean meme underneath it. I'm just going to put it out there on Facebook. Or I'm going to talk about something that's really charged. A lot of high profile, maybe it's an issue of the day. Something that's really controversial. And I'm just going to throw it out there. And I know what's going to happen. I know there's going to be some people that are going to be real upset if I put this post on my wall. Or even biblically, I'm going to talk about this controversial passage. And I'm going to leave it open-ended. I'm just going to throw it up there on my wall. Why? Well, because it's going to get people upset. I'm going to get 100 comments underneath it. They're going to be fighting and arguing. Listen, brethren, listen to Paul's words. We as God's people, we're not in the business of making people mad on purpose. We are not in the business of provoking others to anger. There are some people, that is their struggle. Their temptation is controlling their anger and controlling their wrath. Now, you might make the point, well, then they shouldn't be online. They shouldn't be on Facebook. They shouldn't be on social media. Granted, all right, I get that. That's true. But
Am I contributing to that fact? Am I contributing to that temptation simply for my own pleasure of making people upset, of getting an arousal? I think there's a wise lesson to be learned from what the proverb writer says when he says, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Less is more. Less is more. Rather than making people upset, choose a few words you do say wisely. I think this is just a great principle for social media in general. Just less is more. I mean, you've seen it. There are people and they post about everything all the time. This is what I ate for breakfast, and this is a spoon I ate it with, and a napkin I used to wipe my mouth, and then this is... Listen, less is more. Less is more. You don't have to share every detail about your life all the time. And the lesson the proverb writer is saying is that when you learn to restrain your lips and constrain your words, you're going to find yourself walking with wisdom, because when you speak a lot and you say a lot, you're allowing yourself the temptation, the struggle, the opportunity to say something that's going to get you in trouble. Like someone knew I was preaching on this a while back, and they sent me this picture that says, remember when people had diaries and got mad when someone read them? Now they put everything online and get mad when people don't. And there's just some people. They delight in making people upset. Don't be that person. That's not what God has called us to be. We are peacemakers. We're not people who cause people to get upset, stirring up controversy. Here's another dumb. Don't take private issues public. Don't take private issues public. There are some things that must be kept private, just between you and that other person. Here's one example. In Matthew 18 and verse 15, Jesus said, if your brother sins, go and reprove him in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. Read it again with me. Notice what it does not say. If your brother sins, go and talk about it on Facebook. Make sure you tag him in the post and put some really mean things about him at the end. It doesn't say that, does it? It says, if your brother sins, go and reprove him how? Well, who's going to know about it? Did you notice if we would apply what Jesus talks here about conflict resolution, the only people who's going to know what this person has done is me, that person, and God. And that's it. No one else knows. There's wisdom there. What did Jesus say is the goal of this conflict resolution? The goal at the end is proving I was right and winning the argument. No, that's not it. The goal is crushing him under my foot. He hurt me. Oh, just wait. Just wait till I'm done with him. Nope. He says, if he's listened to you, you've what? It's not that you've won the argument. Nope. You've won your brother. You've won your brother. The goal is restoration. You and I are back in good standing, and both of us are in good standing before the Lord. That's why the proverb writer would say that when there is issues, right? When there is a matter of offense, whoever, the proverb writer says, covers an offense seeks love. But he who repeats a matter separates close friends. He knows that when you cover an issue that someone has, something that someone has done, an offense, when you cover that up, when you keep it concealed, that's an act of love. You know why? I love you so much, I don't want anyone to know what you've done. I want to keep your reputation safe. I don't want anyone to know anything that would harm your reputation, anything that would harm your standing before others. You've hurt me. This is between me and you. I'm covering this. I'm keeping this between us. There are some things that need to be private. Oh, some people are tricky. They think they're crafty. I mean, you'll see things like this. Mr. Jones, some people have no sense. I can't believe how rude some people are. I'm glad I know who my true friends are. Well, I wonder what he's feeling today. You seen that before? Oh, they think they're crafty. They've not tagged anyone on it. I mean, we know it. He's fighting with someone. And very likely that person is one of his friends on Facebook. And so he knows it. And you know what? If that is the case, and he's fighting with someone, and this person threw it up there on Facebook, that is the last thing that's going to help that conflict come to a peaceful resolution. Right? There are some things that need to be kept private. Let me add a little thought on here. Parents, be careful what you share about your kids. I mean, I think that's just a good principle in general. When you put it out there, you can't take it back. If it's out there, it's out there. So be careful what you put about your kids, but especially be careful what you put about your kids in terms of discipline. I mean, it's one thing when your kids make a mistake and they're really young and it's cute, like they color on the wall or, I don't know, they explode a diaper or something. You think it's real cute, so you put it. That's one thing. But when you got a teenager,
and they've been disrespectful, they broke the rules. When you post about it on Facebook in order to bring them shame, to discipline them, I'm going to tell you that it destroys trust. It ruins their intimacy with you. Rather than teaching them the lesson they need to learn about obeying mom and dad, what they've learned is, I cannot trust mom and dad. You've marred their reputation in front of people who know them now. Don't do that. Don't do that. And I say that because there's a lot of Christians who are. When their kids make a mistake, they think the only way they're going to learn is if I go in public and tell everyone on Facebook all the thing that they did, the disgraceful thing they did. Don't do that. Don't do that. There's some matters that need to be kept private. An issue between me and the brother, a church issue, a family issue, a marriage issue, that does not need to be somewhere public. That needs to be between you and that person, you and those directly involved. Don't take those things public. Don't go share it with the world. Deal with it with those who are involved and find a peaceful resolution. That's going to be the best principle you can do moving forward with that subject. Here's our last don't. Don't let it control you. Because Facebook, social media, let's just say it, screens are highly addictive. I know you know that, but let me prove it with some cool stats. Ready? All right. So here is ages 18 to 34. And I am certain you probably cannot determine that chart. It's talking about the average monthly minutes used on social media. And so nearly 100% of those, 18 to 34, are on Facebook, over 1,000 minutes a month. Think about that. Almost all, you see the number up there, almost all of our 18 to 34-year-olds are on Facebook over 1,000 minutes a month. Here's another stat that says that our average daily time spent on social media, on YouTube, that's just a site that shows movies or little video clips, average time is 40 minutes a day. Facebook is 36 minutes. Snapchat is 25 minutes. Instagram is 15 minutes. And Twitter is about 1 minute. Really quick. Now, that may not seem like much, but I like that this company chose to take that time and blow it up over a lifetime. And so in one lifetime, if you look at the stats today, you will have spent 1 year and 10 months on YouTube, 1 year and 7 months on Facebook, 1 year and 2 months on Snapchat. Altogether, it's 5 years and 4 months on social media. And again, that may not seem like much in terms of a lifetime, but think about this. From now until 5 years and 4 months, you're not going to do anything but social media. You're not going to eat. You're not going to sleep. You're just doing nothing but social media straight for 5 years and 4 months. That's what it's talking about. And the sad thing is, they took this stat and they paired it with other daily activities. And so watching TV in our lifetime, we'll have watched 7 years and 8 months. And then there's social media, number two. But number three, eating and drinking. In your lifetime, you will have spent 3 years and 5 months eating. You're going to spend more time on social media than you are eating and drinking. Or grooming yourself, 1 year and 10 months. Again, I blew it up this way on a chart showing you how much time we're spending on these activities. Now, here's the other side that I think needs to be paid careful attention to. Most people today don't have the desktop computers anymore. We just don't have those. In fact, most homes don't even have laptops. The way that they're accessing these sites is through the cell phone or through the tablets. And that has its own issues with it, its own challenges. And if this is something you're not familiar with, if you're not really, especially if you have young children, I'm just going to give you a glimpse. If you're not familiar with this, you got to spend some time. You got to look at this. It's not changing. There's a stat that was asked, can you recall the last time your phone was not within earshot? 63% of smartphone owners keep their phone with them but for all but 1 hour of the waking day. 79% of them keep it with them for all but 2 hours of the day. One out of four responders, look at this, one out of four responders didn't recall a time in their day in which the phone was not within reach or in the same room. Think of that. One out of four cannot remember a time when the phone wasn't always with them. And if maybe right now you're reaching for your phone, wondering if it's on you, maybe this is you. Maybe this is your struggle. All right? 58% of smartphone users don't go 1 hour without checking their phones. And we use a word, rightly so. It's addicted. Addicted. Addiction to screens can be just as powerful, just as alluring as other drugs or addictive substances. In fact, will you turn your Bibles with me? Will you look at something with me? I want you to look in the book of Proverbs. I want you to read it with me in your Bibles.
Proverbs 27. I want you to read it with me. It's just a neat little proverb, but it's rich, rich in truth. Proverbs 27, verse 23 says, "Know well the condition of your flocks and pay attention to your herds." I love that. I love this verse. So it's talking about shepherds and how shepherds need to pay attention to their flocks. Now, if you know anything about shepherds, shepherds, in one sense in the Old Testament, cared for sheep, and they watched sheep, and they took care of sheep. But shepherding is also a motif. It's an example, an illustration of leadership in the Bible. And so God's leaders in the Old Testament were called shepherds, the kings and the priests and the prophets, like Ezekiel 34. God's leaders in the New Testament are called shepherds, right? We call them shepherds of a local congregation in 1 Peter chapter 5. And so if shepherding is an idea of leadership, can you imagine looking at that passage through the lens of the home? And mom and dads are shepherds. And he says, shepherds care for your sheep. I mean, we might ask the question, do you know well the condition of your flock, of your kids? I mean, how's your kids doing? Do you know them well? Do you know their strengths? Do you know their weaknesses? Do you know what they're struggling with today? Are you annoyed with me right now? Can you look at the last phrase again? And hear the call, young parents, to our time. Two words. Pay attention. Pay attention to your herd. Your herd's your family. Your herd is your kids. And the proverb says, pay attention. Because there's a lion that's roaring. And sheep can get distracted. So pay attention to your sheep. I know you've seen it. Because I've seen it. There's the kids out there on the ball game. Playing their heart out, enjoying the sport. And where's mom and dad? They're on the phone. And they look up to see if mom and dad are there. If they saw the shot, if they saw the play. And mom and dad are on the phone. And the home and the little kids, and they say, "Mom, mom, 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 watch this, mom, mom. Hey, dad, look at this, look at me, dad, 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 look at me, look at this." And what are they doing? See, mom's too busy posting how to be a good mother on Facebook than being a good mother in the home. If there were a challenge for parents of this generation, I'm in your camp. Proverbs 27:23, pay attention. Pay attention. Put it down. Put it down and watch your sheep. I've had a lot of people tell me, and I know it's true. There's nothing I can do about it. I hate it. They say, enjoy the season with your kids because you're only going to be here once. And there's times when I've rejoiced in the diaper stage. I'm only going to be here once. But you know what? Even when that passes, it's gone. It's gone. And I'm not going to have this moment again. I'm not going to have these kids again. This is it. This is my one shot. They're in the home now. And they're young now. And if I don't pay attention, if I'm not watching them, if I'm not clued in with what they're into or their influences or where they're heading in life, they're gone. And I didn't see it coming. Know well the condition of your flock. Pay attention to your herd. Maybe if you're like me and you're a young parent who has technology, we don't just throw it away. That's not the lesson today. And we'll talk about the good of technology. But maybe a good thing for you, what we've tried to do in our home, is that this has one place. And it stays there. Kind of like a wall phone, if you remember those ancient technologies that stayed in one place. Yep, this goes in the bedroom. This goes next to the bed, and it stays there. And if I miss a call, I missed it. I mean, can you imagine? What did we do when we weren't home and we missed a call? What did we do? We missed it, right? I've had people ask that. Well, what happens if someone texts you and you're not there? Yeah, I guess I'll get it back. Or I won't. But you know what? Life goes on. I'm not going to let my life be controlled by technology. And so the phone stays in one place. And when I'm home, I'm home. And when I'm with the kids, I'm with the kids. And that's it. Because I need to pay attention. Pay attention to your herd. Young parents, grandparents, moms and dads with younger parents, with your kids being parents, remind them. You've got sheep in your flock. You've got sheep in your home. Watch them. Be careful. Pay attention to them. All of this is what Paul is trying to get us to see in that Ephesians 5:16. Make the most of your time, because guess what? You only have what there is. We're only given 24 hours every day, and we're only given the life that God has given us once, and so we need to make sure we're using it wisely. I want to give one other exhortation about this idea about being careful with this addictive technology, especially to parents with young kids. And here it is. It's a little chart. You may not be able to read all of it. You just really need to pay attention to the top little section there. 90% of children eight to 16 have viewed pornography. The largest consumers of pornography are 12 to 17-year-old boys. You cannot, listen to me, you cannot give a child unrestricted access to the internet. You cannot do that. You cannot. And so if they say, I'm bored, I want your phone, you can have it, but guess what? There's going to be a lot of blockers on that phone. There's going to be restricted access as to what you can get on, and I'm on it all the time. And so if you're young kids, if you have young kids like I do, you have settings on your phone that keep you from dangerous places. They better be in place. They better be on. And you better be aware of the apps that they're playing with. If you have older kids and they have their own technology, here it is, parents. Here it is, grandparents. You have full access to what they're doing all the time on their phone, which means you can at any time say, I need to see your phone. I need to see who you're texting. I need to see who you're messaging. I need to see your browser history. I get to see it. Well, that's not fair. Life's not fair. Tough. This, 8 to 12 or 12 to 17-year-old boys, 90% of 8 to 16-year-olds is some in this room. You know what that means? It starts innocently, it starts quickly, and they're there. I cannot tell you how many young parents have come to me down in Dallas. My son, my daughter is addicted to pornography. How did it happen? They had this smartphone. They had this assignment at school, and they were on the computer, and it started. So innocently, so quickly, and they're hooked. Parents, be aware. Watch out. Set up blockers in your home. Check their technology. See who they are texting and what they're getting. Because there really are dangers out there. The proverb maybe says it the best. Proverbs 29, verse 15, the rod of reproof gives wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to a mother. Think about that in terms of the internet. A child left to himself to navigate the dangerous world of the internet is going to bring great shame to his family, because they need to learn. This does not mean we become Amish and we abandon it altogether. What it means is we help our children best understand how to navigate the digital world. There are dangers out there. There's good things, but there are bad things. And so I'm going to help you understand how to find those good things and avoid the bad. We got to be on it. We got to be vigilant. But we can do that. We can do it. Let's talk about some good. This all seems really negative. Let's talk about some good things. Some good things with social media. Because there are some good things. Like number one, do think before you post. So what does it do? One thing that's kind of attached here. Do think before you post. So when I got something I'm going to post on social media, something I want to share, slow down. Slow down and think a little bit. Think, ask yourself some questions like, am I applying the golden rule, Matthew 7 and verse 12? Treat others the way I want to be treated. In other words, would I want someone saying this about me online? Would I want them sharing this about me online? Because if not, maybe I don't need to post it. Maybe that tells me something about what I'm posting. What about this? Am I regarding others as more important than myself? Philippians 2 and verse 3. Or is this just all about me all the time? How great I am. Boy, I am just the best thing since, I don't know, sliced bread. I'm so great. It's all about me. Is there anything about others? But other people, is there anything about Jesus, anything about the Lord, or is it only about me? Am I putting others first? Am I showing that humility through my social media sites? What about this? Is it true, or honorable, or right, or pure, or lovely, or a good repute, or excellent, or worthy of praise? I mean, there's a lot here. It's a great verse. He would end this by saying, think about these things. Let your mind set on these things. But boy, can you imagine if we would stop and ask ourselves this question before we posted anything? Just look at the first one. Is it true? Well, everything on the internet's true.
You sure about that?
Do I know it's true? Have I checked the facts? Or is this just something that my cousin Eddie sent me and it sounds really neat? I'm going to throw it out there. Do I know? Is it true? Is it honorable? Is it something that someone would praise, worthy of praise, honorable? Is it something that's of high moral caliber? Is it right? Is it pure? Would your mother like it? Would your elders approve of it? Is it lovely? Am I only posting negative things? Am I just bashing Washington all the time? Do I have anything that's lovely or of good repute? Something that would uplift someone's day. Something that would give them something positive and good to think about. Would it glorify God? We just sang that. In my life, be glorified. Couldn't we add another verse? In my social media, be glorified. In the words that I say and the things that I talk, is this going to glorify God? Essentially what we're asking is, what would Jesus post? Right? We talked this morning about Jesus who went to the synagogues. Jesus was there. He was where the people were. If Jesus was alive today and he wanted to be where the people were online, what kind of things would Jesus post? What kind of things would Jesus share? What kind of things would Jesus like? How would Jesus use his time on social media? This would be a good little thing maybe to clip out and put next to your computer or put in an iPad cover. Before I post this, I got to ask myself, what would Jesus post? And you know what? If he wouldn't post it, then neither should I. Neither should I. Here's number two. Do connect with each other. That's one of the best things about social media is that you can connect with another person in an instant. In an instant. I mean, a person from around the world at a completely different country at another time zone, you can connect with them instantly. Sharing messages, sharing pictures, it's great for grandparents, keeping up with the grandkids when you don't live close. There's good things about social media. One thing that will help us as brethren, because I am certain there's a lot here and you're connected, you're friends, you're engaged on social media. It ought to help the way that you connect with one another outside of these walls. You see, the Hebrew writer reminded us that we need each other outside. We need each other outside of here. We said, encourage one another day after day, as long as it's still called today. Lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. You hear what he's saying? It's tough out there. It's tough outside. The world's tough. I mean, we got people that are going to work in hostile environments. We got people and their family life is a wreck. We got temptations all around us because Satan doesn't seem to ever want to give up. It's hard out there, so what's our answer? Well, we together, we as brethren, we as God's people, just make sure you're encouraging one another, building up one another. How often? Every Sunday. Well, no, it is on Sunday, but he says day after day, every day. How easy is that now with technology? In Paul's day, you'd have to go see it face to face or write a letter. How can we do it now? We could do it in an instant with our cell phones. Just a text, just a Facebook message, just an Instagram picture, whatever it would be, just saying, hey, thinking about you today. Hey, sister, just want to let you know, I had you on my mind. I'm praying for you today. Hey, brother, I read this passage in my daily Bible reading. Made me think about you. I hope you have a great day today. How easy is that? Keeping connected, building up the saints through social media. Here's the last one. Spread the gospel. Spread the gospel. I think we have to, brother. Let me go back to that thought. You see, Jesus said to his disciples, which applies to us as his disciples today, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Question for you, where's the world today? 1.4 billion monthly active users, 890 million daily active users. Where's the world today? They're online. They're on social media. You know what that means? For those who cannot, there are some people, and you know yourself well, and you know, if I got on social media, if I got on Facebook, I know me, I know I would be tempted to say things I shouldn't say, or behave in a way I shouldn't behave, so I don't need to touch it. I don't need that in my life. I know I'd get real addictive, and so I don't touch it. And I applaud that. I think that's an excellent attitude. If you cannot handle it, don't get on it. But I do think there ought to be some of God's people who are actively engaged on social media because the world's there. And I want to show you this statistic up here. I don't know if you can see it. I'm going to interpret it for you. There's a church north of Indianapolis. I held a meeting there a month ago. This is one of their posts, the Fisher's Church of Christ. This one post had 689 likes, 32 people commented on it, 136 people shared it. Okay? What that meant is because so many people shared it on their page and liked it and put a comment underneath it, 10,922 people were reached by that. 10,000. And now here's another one from this one post, same church. This is a different date. 561 people liked it. 28 people commented on it. 174 people shared it. 11,549 people were reached. No, that does not mean 11,000 people obeyed the gospel. No, it does not mean 11,000 people went to that Fisher's church to go and ask about Jesus. What it means is 11,000 people saw that post. Question, how much would it cost to send 11,549 postcards to the Coleman area? And how likely are they to look at that postcard once they put it in their mailbox? You know, I think all of us, one of the common struggles we have in our walk is this evangelism. I just don't feel like I'm doing enough or I'm doing the right things. You know how easy it is? You know how easy this is, evangelism? It's this easy. You have a comment or you have a post from your church. You know how easy your activity is here as a local church? Click. Done. There's evangelism. Do you understand that? When you share a comment, each one of your friends get to see what it was that you shared. And I looked, not at your pages because I wasn't creepy like that, but I've looked at other people. I've looked at their pages. The average Facebook user has over 200 friends. 200. So think of that. In one moment, all I do is click from the comfort of my home and my PJs on a Monday morning. I can click this, and guess what? 200 people have now seen the post about Jesus. How easy is that? How easy is it to take something I'm doing every day, daily Bible reading, and in that post, just put it on there. This is what I read today. May the Lord bless you. Post. Or here's something that I heard and learned in a sermon yesterday. You got any questions, just let me know. Post. Easy. Easy. And look how many people are engaged today. You know what this reminds us? There's a principle Jesus taught. Luke 12:48. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required. And for him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more. You know what that principle is? Great expectations. When God gives great, he expects great in return. When he gives even greater, he expects even greater in return. Brethren, look where we are today. Can you imagine the Apostle Paul learning that he could go around the world at home? That he could preach that gospel, not having to get on the ship, but he could stay at home in Athens, wherever he was? That's us. God has handed to us a wide open door through social media, through this online platform. If you're honest with me, it's not going to be here forever. It won't. It's going to change. That's the nature of life. Something will happen. It's going to get filtered. Some sort of political engine will take over. It's just the way it happens. Social media will not have its trend. It will not be as popular. Something new is going to come along and change it all. But today, it is. Today, it's working. Today, a lot of people are there. Today, there's a lot of people who can be reached and influenced for the sake of the gospel. And so those who can, we must. We must. We should use our time and our activity to point others to Jesus. No, it's not pointing our finger in their faces, saying that they're wrong. It's saying if you're in need, if you're looking for the answer, if you're looking for hope, I know the way. Can I help you find it? I know someone who will listen. I know someone who knows the way home. I know someone who's willing to give you a second chance. Would you like to know more? We can do that. We can do that. You know why all this matters? Because one day, just listen to me, one day, everyone will spend an eternity somewhere. There's not a pass on that. Everyone gets to spend an eternity somewhere. And heaven is a prepared place for prepared people. The people who have washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. And so we preach and we teach and we shine our lights and we try and point the way home because we realize God has given us a gift. God has given us grace. He's offered it to the world. May we just be but a beacon to show people that same grace, that same hope for home. Thank you for listening so well. If you're here tonight and you need prayers from the saints, if you're here and you're not in a right relationship with God and we can help you, you need to come right up here. This is where you need to be. So if you need to start your journey with God and be baptized in the waters of baptism, or if you just need some prayers from the saints, someone to help you and listen to you, just come on right up here. Let's do it right now while we sing.